Okay, good morning, everyone. I want to first of all thank, as I did last time after the verdict was rendered, just the outstanding job by the City of Tonawanda Police Department here. This morning we have Chief Strasburg, we have Captain Foles here, Captain Butcher, and Lieutenant Sheehan with us from the City of Tonawanda today. And again, I can't thank them enough for all the great work that they did in this case and just the fantastic job of putting this together for us so that we could go to trial with the strongest case possible. I also want to mention and thank the City of Tonawanda Fire Department and the Erie County Sheriff's Fire Investigation Unit. Both of those two entities were also a key role in, at the end of the day, bringing Jessica here justice, which is what this is all about. So again, thank you, Chief. Thank you to your great work that you've done, and a big shout out to the Fire Department of Tonawanda as well as the Erie County Sheriff's Department. I also want to thank my two assistant ADAs, Rebecca Schnurl and Ryan Haggerty. They just did a fantastic job in arguing this case to the jury, presenting all the evidence to the jury, and getting a conviction in this matter. As I say numerous times, this office and jury trials are not about winning and losing. I will leave the winning and losing to the Buffalo Bills and other professional sports teams who are in the business of winning. We are not about winning and losing. We are about providing justice, and that is what we do each and every day, providing justice to this community and to individual victims. In this case, as all of us know here, we have an individual victim. We have an extended family of this individual victim right here, her children, her parents, her friends, the entire community of the City of Tonawanda, the entire workforce at Tim Hortons. We have numerous people out there who are victims in this case. No one, obviously, is more a victim than Jessica. And obviously, when a horrific crime occurs, unfortunately, there is a victim and a victim's family that must go on, that must continue with their lives. And I always say that at the end of a case, there is no complete or real closure here for Jessica. There's legal closure. There's closure, legal closure is a part of it. Legal closure is the conclusion of the case that developed from what happened to her. But what happened to her is way more than a case. What happened to her is way more than a sheet of paper, an indictment that says the people of the state of New York versus Jonathan White. That's a piece of paper. That sheet of paper contains facts in an indictment, and it was that indictment that led to the trial. But like I said, that's a sheet of paper. What she now has to go with now and go forward with for the rest of her life is way more than a sheet of paper. It's way more than an indictment. It's way more than 12 jurors saying that this individual is guilty of a crime. That's occurred. And that is closure in that sense. But there is no complete closure for Jessica, because she has to live now the rest of her life with what this man did to her. And I am completely confident that she's going to be able to do that. I say that because not only has she fought through the 4 months she was in a hospital, the over now 15 surgeries that she's had to have, the entire medical treatment that she's had to continue now for over a year. That just shows me that in her own way, she will live life and provide closure in her own way for herself. And the fact that she came into court back in October and stood there in court and pointed at Mr. White and said, he did this to me, and this is what he did to me, and was able to articulate that on the witness stand, that's courage. And again, coming in this morning and speaking before the judge and telling the judge exactly what her thoughts were on sentencing, that again is courage. And so this beautiful woman right here has exhibited courage throughout this whole thing. And I have no doubt that she will continue that courage for the rest of her life. And when she does that, that will, as she goes on with her life, hopefully provide you the closure that you need for this. But you don't have it right now, and I recognize that. All I can give you is legal closure. And we've done that. And I wish you all the best. I thank you for your courage, for what you did to help us out. We're all a team here. We're all part of a team. And while I don't technically represent you, I technically represent the people of the state of New York. That the people of the state of New York are my clients. However, you are a resident of the state of New York. You are on the indictment in that category, the people of the state of New York. And so whenever there's a victim in a crime, while people always make it a point, you know, Mr. Flynn, the victim really isn't your client. Well, I tell them, well, you know what? Yeah, technically you're right, but you're wrong in that, because the victim is part of the people of the state of New York. And so while I do represent the people of the state of New York, in a case like this, I represent you. We all represent you for what you went through. And again, like I said at the beginning here, it's not about winning or losing. It's not about how many cases at the end of the year, of what my conviction rate is. What's all that matters in all these cases that I do, each and every day when I speak before you, all that matters is justice. And hopefully, Jessica, we gave you justice. And you can say whatever you want here.
December 9th, 2018, I turned 25. December 17th, 2018, Jonathan White attempted to take away any more years that I would have, which would have left me with only 25 years of life. Having this conviction and this sentencing, to me, is poetic justice that he now has to serve those 25 years in retribution for the years he attempted to take away from me and our family. Like D.A. Flynn said, it's not about winning and losing, because even receiving the maximum sentence and getting the conviction that we were all hoping for, there are no winners here. I've still lost. My children have still lost. And Jonathan has lost. Our family will never be the same as it was. And I can only hope that someday it will be better than it ever could have been before this. In my opinion, the only thing that Jonathan succeeded in doing was removing himself from mine and my children's lives, which is more than I ever could have asked for. But unfortunately, they will have to grow up knowing that this is what happened. That there are people out there that do horrible things for reasons that nobody might ever know. And they'll have to live with it and question what kind of people they're going to be, knowing that their father did this. And that he did it to their mother. And not just my children, but all of the children in my family. My siblings, my nieces and nephews, my grandparents, friends, cousins. Everyone in the community has been affected by this and will continue to be affected by this for many years to come. And I can only hope that this case can help other people. That people who think that they are stuck in a situation like I felt can have the courage to get out, have the courage to speak out, and hopefully prevent anything like this or worse ever happening again. Thank you.
Any questions?
John, obviously, this was a very emotional case, and I know you have to follow within the parameters of the law, but do you still think 25 years is enough?
Well, you know, I could get in trouble for commenting on whether or not an individual should get more years than the law prescribes for it. I'll answer it this way. I mean, as Jessica just said there, I mean, whether it's 25 years, whether it's 30 years, whether it was 50 years, it's still not going to change the fact of what happened to her. It's not going to change the fact of what she has to do now going forward with the rest of her life. It does, I'm not naive, that it does change that. It would change how long he is off the streets for, obviously. I mean, if it would change how long he is no longer part of society. So I do recognize that. As you can all imagine in this case, and Ryan and Rebecca, told the judge this morning, we obviously want the max punishment here. I mean, 25 was the max, he should clearly get the max punishment here. He got the max. He got the max punishment. He got the 5 years post release was the max too. He got a order protection to 2051. So if he does get out, with good time added in there, that's factored in the 25 years there. He will, hopefully have the order protection at least 5 more years after if he ever gets out. I'm not going to comment, Mike, on whether or not the law should be more than 25 in an attempted murder charge. I'll leave that to Albany. I'm just happy that he got the max, I thank God that he doesn't have the life on the end of it, because if he did have the life on the end of it, that would have mean that she would have died, and we're obviously fortunate that she didn't die here, which she easily could have, and so in that sense, there is a silver lining here in the fact that she is with us, and that he's not with us. And he is in jail, as he should be in jail, for the next 25 years.
John, even before the session had finished, his attorney declared that there would be an appeal filed as early as today. And in his brief remarks, stated that, you know, just because I'm not showing remorse, that doesn't mean I'm not thinking about this. But he effectively didn't really take responsibility for the crime for which he was convicted.
He didn't take responsibility at trial. He, his defense at trial was that this was a mistake, that he tried to douse himself on fire first, and she got caught on fire by accident. Obviously, that's a total lie. It's a total fabrication. The evidence, none of the physical evidence showed that. The physical evidence, his jacket was examined, and his jacket had no signs of gasoline being dumped on his jacket. The back of his jacket caught on fire. That was the only part of his jacket that caught on fire, and that caught on fire because of her. What happened to her fire caused that back of his jacket to cause on fire. That's it. So he has minimized responsibility from this since day one, and he continued to minimize responsibility this morning. And so I've said this before, I don't thrive, or I don't particularly like sending people to jail. I mean, I don't get my kicks out of that. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, the guy's, 28 years old now? How old is he? 28?
29.
All right, if you think about it, he's 29 years old now. 25 years ago, he was a 4-year-old kid at this time opening up Christmas presents. All right? So 25 years ago, he was a little kid opening up presents right now in a situation that was a happy environment on Christmas morning. No one thought of him 25 years ago and foresaw that he would now be in jail now for 25 years. So I recognize, and I can relate to that kid 25 years ago. And unfortunately, at some point in his life, he took a wrong turn. But I appreciate and I recognize that at one point, he wasn't an attempted murderer. He was a 4-year-old kid opening Christmas presents on Christmas morning. And so, like I said, I don't thrive in now 25 years later sending him to jail. What I thrive on is giving her justice. And what I thrive on is making sure that the city of Tonawanda is a safe place to live, work, and play. And having him off the streets and in jail now for 25 years gives her justice and makes their streets safe. That's what I thrive on. Anyone else? Yeah.
The judge spoke about how he felt weak in the knees when he saw that justice outside the night of the verdict. Sometimes you don't hear from a judge speaking like
no.
that in court so passionately.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if Jessica even would comment on that as well as you.
Yeah, no. I think that that Judge Montour was the perfect judge to handle this case. Judge Montour is an exceptional jurist. Judge Montour has both the human qualities that one needs to be a judge, from the empathy factor and the human understanding factor, as well as knowing the rule of law. He has both of those, and those are both qualities that we need in judges. I also note that Judge Montour this morning took 78 seconds and had everyone in the courtroom pause for 78 seconds to remember what that 78 seconds was to her. And obviously, none of us can even begin to feel or understand the excruciating pain that she was in for that 78 seconds. But at least it was a powerful statement for the judge to make to put everyone on hold for 78 seconds to remember in our own way there in the courtroom what she went through. And so I have nothing but the utmost respect for Judge Montour, and like I said, he was a perfect one to handle this case. You got any thoughts on it, Jess?
It was extremely touching and moving to hear Judge Montour mention the woman standing outside, because we left the courtroom very late that day and saw her outside throughout the day, and she was still there when we were leaving. And we stopped and spoke to her for some time, and she was a wonderful woman. She herself is a victim of domestic violence and can't get justice for herself. So she comes every time there's a domestic violence case and stands outside and tries to rally support and at least be one voice there to make sure that those who speak out are not alone. And she stood out there from 7 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night in the rain, the wind, without fail, without stopping. She did what she felt was necessary and as much as she could do to try and bring justice and also awareness that this is something serious that happens every day, and it's not always visible. It's not something that you can anticipate or avoid or expect. And people need to know that there are people out there that will help you, will be there for you, no matter how trapped or alone or scared you feel. There's someone to talk to. Even if you're too afraid to go to the police. I had never called the police in my own instance during the 8 years we were together because I didn't feel it was necessary. I thought that the problems we had were mild and I could handle them on my own, and that it was never that bad. It would never be that bad. Nothing bad would ever happen. It was just a normal relationship that had problems until it wasn't. And unfortunately, in many instances, people don't make it. I was extremely blessed and lucky. A human person can only survive 2.5 minutes on fire. I was on fire for half that time. Had we not been so close to the police station, had the maintenance man that I used to complain about going outside for cigarette breaks not been outside in his truck smoking when it happened, he wouldn't have been there. Nobody would have been there to help or to stop it, and this outcome would have been a lot different if there was ever any case at all. And I just thank God and all of the wonderful people that I worked with that were so quick to try and help, all of the city workers that immediately came to help, the ambulance EMTs that were with me that kept me going on the way to the hospital when I felt like I couldn't take it anymore. They kept me going. I had only looked at myself for a second and seen how bad my injuries were before I didn't look at myself anymore. I didn't want to see them. I just wanted to close my eyes and not be in pain anymore. And I could tell it was bad because the ENT that was trying to help me and put an IV in couldn't. She couldn't stop shaking. She was panicking. The guy that was with her just kept telling her, you have to find a way to do it. You can do this. If you can't, I'll do it for you. And the entire ride, I begged them to let me pass out just to make it go away. And they just told me to keep talking. Tell us anything that you can. And I gave out as much information about everybody that I knew as possible. And I've told many people that when it was happening, I feel like my brain was only half processing everything and only working at 50%, because by the time the ambulance got there, I had forgot that my mother had my children. All I could think about was, if I was there and Jonathan was there, what was happening to my kids? Where were they? And I begged the police officers to give them to my mother, make sure she gets them, even though she had already had them. And they are what kept me alive and conscious enough to tell them what happened. And then by the time I made it to ECMC and I could hear them taking me out of the ambulance and hear the doctors telling everybody what to do, I let myself go. That was the last thing I remember before waking up 27 days later, not knowing that I had lost 27 days of my life. I just assumed I was going to close my eyes and sleep and wake up in a couple hours and be able to tell everybody what happened, not knowing that my family spent 27 days not knowing if I was okay. And they all made fun of me because the first thing I did when I woke up was ask if everybody else was okay, because I hadn't finished my shift at work. I wanted to make sure that they had made it through the shift understaffed and that my mother was okay, my siblings were okay, because as long as they were okay, no matter what I was going through, I knew I could make it. Throughout this entire thing, I continue to tell myself that this is the path I was meant to be on. And there's no point in going backwards or stopping, because it won't get you anywhere. You can only move forward to get to the better life. I consider it like a phoenix that burns and rises from the ashes again, new and better than before. This has cleansed every toxic thing that I had to deal with in my life before him. Without these actions, I would still be arguing with him every day. I would be fighting with him. There would be countless problems that not only I would have to deal with, but my children would have to deal with. And he removed himself from the situation by doing this. And in doing so, I can start a new life, a better life, with the people that are truest to me. Because they say you never know who your true friends are until you really need them. And it's true. I made the best friends I could have ever possibly imagined, and ones that I never expected to make throughout this ordeal. And this has touched so many more lives than I could have ever imagined. I am awestruck by all the attention that I've gotten, because in my mind, I'm still just a Tim Hortons employee that was making your coffees wrong in the morning and trying to get my job done. And never in my life would I have thought that I could inspire people or do something better to make not just my life better, but hundreds of lives. The ENT that was with me quit his job and joined the police academy because he wanted to prevent anything from happening, not fix it after it already happened. Two of my friends have gotten pregnant and are expecting, and they had never spoken to each other before this incident. They met in the hospital room visiting me and are now starting a family. It's overwhelming and truly touching that D.A. Flynn and Judge Montour could be so moved by such a small action as staying alive. Because that's the easy part. There's nothing else you can do, in my opinion. And I just hope moving forward that I can do as much as possible for whoever needs it.
Jessica, as you move on to that next chapter of your life, I mean, is this a role that you want to embrace, being an advocate, speaking on behalf of people who went through any sort of domestic violence situation? Is that something you want to embrace, or is that something that you just want to kind of put everything behind you?
I'd like to embrace it. I feel like everything that happened happened exactly the way it was supposed to happen. Had he not come to my work that day and done this, he still could have done it at a different time. He could have done it at our house, where there would have been no one to help me. He could have done it when my children were around, and they could have gotten hurt or had to have witnessed it and lived with that for the rest of their lives. And instead, everyone was in the right place at the right time. I was minutes away from the police station where they could respond so fast. And I don't feel like I survived this just to ignore it and brush it off. Because when you experience a miracle, it's hard to say that that's not what it is. And I would love to be able to help anybody that needs it, even if they just need a voice to speak for them or somebody to express their concerns with or anything I can do. When I was in the hospital, there was only one person who could come and talk to me, a woman who was also set on fire by her husband. And it took 2 years for him to get convicted. And she was at home with her children when it happened and had to put herself out and saved herself. And she doesn't speak very much English, so it was difficult for us to communicate. But having her there and knowing that somebody else could survive this and move past this helped me get through it. And if anything like this ever happens again to anybody or anyone that gets injured in any situation needs somebody to talk to, and even if they just need a little bit of hope, I would be more than willing to give that to them.
Jessica, if I may, you mentioned today that you had lost a lot, but you also mentioned that you had a lot of gains since this first happened to you. Can you tell me more about that?
Like I mentioned, I gained the truest friends I've ever had. Friends that I've been, people I've been friends with for over 10 years didn't come to court with me. They didn't visit in the hospital unless it fit their agenda. They truly showed their colors on what kind of friend that they were. And then there were girls that I worked with that I didn't get along with at work. We had never spoken outside of work, that came every week with their family. And we had dinner together. Even when I was unable to feed myself, they would come and feed me and bring me homemade food and still continue to come to our house for Sunday dinners and holiday dinners. I have gained a wonderful life with my sons without ever having to worry about what John could do to us or them. I've gained the greatest man that I could have never dreamed of. Because of this, we were friends before this had happened. He came up during the trial, Matthew Cora. He was my friend before this, and that's all we had decided we would ever be, was friends. Because my life was complicated, I knew that even with me and John not being together, it would be a problem. And he was fine with that. And then in the hospital when I woke up, he was there. And during my 27 days unconscious, him and my family did not quite get along. Understandably, my mother's trust was very slim because this man that we had welcomed into our family for over 8 years did this horrible thing, and here's this strange guy showing up every day, taking up the limited 4 hours of visiting time that I was allowed when she felt that my close friends and family should have it. And despite their attempts to push him away, he still came back every day. He took 2 buses and walked through out the winter every day and said that he would continue to do so until I told him I didn't want him there. And he continued to come, and then after I woke up out of my coma, he asked if I was finally ready to admit that we had feelings for each other and turn it into something more so he could have something to tell my family so they would stop yelling at him about coming by. And he's been with me every day since, no matter how many times I have offered to let him bail out. And he's a young man that shouldn't have to take care of a young disabled woman and her three toddlers. He could have a much more peaceful life, and he chooses every day to continue to do so, including today. He couldn't be here because he's at home taking care of my three sick children. And that's something I could have never dreamed of, especially after what happened. I've gained such a strong bond with my family. We used to joke for months before this happened that we wanted a house big enough for all of us to live in so we could be together more and not have to try and see each other during our busy schedules or only meet for grocery runs when we all had to go shopping at the same time. And it didn't happen the way that we wanted it to, but we ended up with a house big enough for all of us, and now we're all under the same roof and living together happily. And I've gained a lot of peace from this. Whether he believes the lies that he says or pretends to be remorseful, him denying his actions proves that he's not remorseful for what he did. Because he's still denying any accountability for his actions. And it makes no difference to me. When me and Haggerty first met, he asked me how long is long enough for him to go away. What would you be willing to settle for, putting him away for? And I told him it was irrelevant. The amount of time that he spends in jail does not affect any part of my life. It's not going to change how he feels. It's not going to change how I feel. And that's okay. I don't hate him for his actions. I am not angry about it. I'm not even sad about it. What upsets me is the time I lost with my children that I can never get back. And that my children will not only not grow up with their father, but one day have to learn what he did and possibly doubt themselves, because I'm sure every person at some point in their life thinks about what parts of their parents they've gotten and if they're going to end up like them.